Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Bruce Schneier, who is an internationally renowned security technologist and the New York Times bestselling author of 14 books, including A Hacker's Mind. He's a lecturer at the Harvard Kennedy School, a board member of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and chief of security architecture at Inrupt, Inc. His latest book, co-authored with Nathan Sanders, is Rewiring Democracy, How AI Will Transform Our Politics, Government, and Citizenship. And he also has an article with Nathan Sanders at The Guardian, Don't Bet That the Pentagon or Anthropic is Acting in the Public Interest. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bruce Schneier.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. And let's talk about your article first and then get into the book. Obviously, it seems a little vindictive what both the Secretary of Defense has done in terms of not just canceling Anthropic's contract with the Pentagon, but Trump went further by banning it from all government agencies and departments. Hegseth said that they were woke for having some guardrails on the use of AI, and Trump seems to have all wanted to destroy their market position. So how much have they been damaged by Trump's ban and essentially dissing them on Wall Street?
I think this is a lot of smoke and not a lot of fire at this point. So they've not been banned yet. There's talk. There are going to be lawsuits. It'll take 6 months to extricate Anthropic out of every place it is. And who knows what'll happen between now and then. This is a lot of posturing. It's a lot of bullying. I think actually Anthropic is doing well because it's positioning itself as the moral AI. I don't think it is, but that is the position, and that matters. So I don't know. I'm reading all these articles and just wondering if anybody will even remember this 3 months from now.
But what about reports that there were AI programs? I'm not sure whether Anthropic or some of the other competitors doing Pentagon war games, and that 90%+ of the time the AI model resorted to the use of nuclear weapons?
No. Is that more or less than humans doing the same games? I don't know. I would guess it's about the same. Again, it's a whole lot of talk. Yes, if you run simulations about nuclear weapons with AIs, they use nuclear weapons. Okay. Are we surprised? We're not giving AIs the launch code, so I don't know why this matters. But yeah, I mean, all of this is interesting. All of this is like, I guess, was news before we declared war in Iran. And I don't know. I don't see anything lasting here.
But as an educator, Bruce, is there a valid concern already because kids can use their iPhones? They don't have to add, multiply, reading and writing and arithmetic's out the window. Spell check means you don't have to learn how to spell. Is the advent of AI to education, would that mean that kids no longer need to think?
Probably not. I mean, I think since the Greek times, we've been complaining about kids these days. I think it was Aristotle who complained that reading, literacy, meant that people would no longer have to think. You know, I think this is generational. Yes, it'll be different. Yes, we have to figure out education. I am teaching right now at University of Toronto. And yeah, the students are using AIs. And we have to figure out how to teach in a world of AIs, like we had to think about how to teach in a world of Wikipedia and pocket calculators and printing and television and all of those things. So yes, I mean, I think there are going to be big changes. I don't know what they are, but I'm not panicking.
Well, of all of the studies and reports on AI, I think most of them that I've seen have been pretty dystopian. And it seems to me that you're cautiously optimistic. Is that a way to describe you?
I am. And I mean, I can send you equally high pile of utopian visions of AI. I think the truth is going to be somewhere in the middle. I see AI as a power-enhancing technology. It enhances the power of the humans that use it. If the humans want to do good things, AI will help. If the humans want to do bad things, AI will help as well. So, you know, I don't see it tipping the scales in one way in particular. I see it tipping the scales in both ways. And this really means we as society have to figure out, how to deal with powerful humans, humans that are powered with AI. Now, we've had a lot of trouble dealing with powerful humans powered by money. So, my guess in the near term, AI is going to be more dystopian than utopian because it's going to be used by the powerful to increase their power. But my hope is that with sort of like with everything else in our society, eventually we as a species figure it out. Maybe that's too optimistic, but I'm trying to be hopeful.
Well, given that we are at war, I know we've talked
I
about
know, right? When did that happen? Over the weekend.
it. Exactly. And I know that we started out talking about the Pentagon, but the first piece of discussion about AI and the military, I recall, came from Vladimir Putin, who, of course, is at war with Ukraine, his war on Ukraine. And he said that whoever captures AI or captures the lead on AI will dominate the battlefield. Is that the case? And if
Yeah,
that.
I don't think so. I mean, what we're learning from the war in the Ukraine is that better tech doesn't necessarily mean domination. I think the US has learned that again and again over the previous half century, that better tech isn't enough to dominate. I think we're seeing a whole lot of clever uses of the technology. By all sides, right? Israel is using AI for targeting. And while we could talk about saying, look, we don't want AI used in war, we don't want killer robots, what history teaches us, like it or not, is that all technologies are used for war. Right? Before World War I, there was widespread agreement that we should never use airplanes in war because it'd be too devastating. The war starts, and within a year, everyone's using airplanes. So, and it's not great. But it is really what we got. We humans use everything possible in war.
So, Bruce, now let's talk about rewiring democracy, how AI will transform our politics, government, and citizenship, your new book. And it basically says, for example, that AI will enhance a civil servant's ability to shape private sector behavior, automating either the enforcement or neglect of industry regulations. It will also explain how both lawyers and judges will leverage the speed of AI, upending how we think about law enforcement, litigation, and dispute resolution. So already that's an awful lot on the table.
It's a lot, and the book has a lot more. And because there's a lot going on. There's so much, I don't want to describe this. There's so much going on with AI right now, and it's going to affect every aspect of our lives. And in our book, we look about sort of all aspects of democracy. And we conclude that AI is going to affect them all, right? Some good, some bad.
Well, there's an AI gold rush going on, isn't there, from Wall
It's an
Street?
AI gold rush or an AI bubble. I mean, yes. I mean, the AI is sort of propping up the U.S. stock market. So I'm not convinced any of the companies that are around today are going to be the ones who are going to make all the money in AI. I think this is going to be kind of like the dot-com bubble in like the early 2000s, where the companies all went under, but the technology was still good, and eventually new companies emerge that could use it and use it well. So I don't know. I just see too much money being basically set on fire by these big tech companies. And I'm not sure I see a path of profitability right now. But the technology is real. The technology does amazing things. And we are going to figure out how. It might take a couple of decades, but I think we will.
So, if all this money's pouring in, I'm just trying to get a handle on where it's going to. We hear that they're going into data centers, which require a lot of electricity, etc. But beyond that, what is the value, and what will the winners bring to the table, short of the computing power that comes from these huge data systems?
They're going to bring to the table ways to use AI that actually does good. Right? AI in medicine, AI in the law, AI in accounting, AI, all these areas, right? AI are artificial thinkers, right, in some form. And they have value, but we need to figure out how to incorporate them in what we are doing. I don't know if you remember, this is like in the 80s when the computer revolution starts happening. It's like 2 decades, maybe 1 decade before the businesses saw any real improvements in computerization. Computers hit the workplace and everyone's saying they don't make a difference. Well, it took a couple of decades to figure out how they make a difference. And my guess is something like that's going to happen here, that it's going to take a decade or two for systems, businesses to figure out how to incorporate AI in a way that's good, that's positive, and not negative.
So, what do we have on the market now? How would you rate negativity versus positivity? Because
Oh man, I don't know. That seems like an awful detailed thing to ask. I'm just hand waving here.
right. Well, but people say that Claude is better than
You look at the
GPT.
leaderboards, they're all about the same. They're better, but they're a little bit better. It is surprising how similar all of the big models are to each other.
So, is there then the possibility that AI will flourish and humans will atrophy?
There's the possibility of everything. There's a possibility that a comet will hit the Earth. I'm not worried about that. Of all the things you have to worry about, that is way down on my list. But is it possible? Lots of things are possible.
Well, a lot of the people that have written about your book and supported it, some of the people, for example, like Vint Cerf, who's one of the internet pioneers, says that while Schneier and Sanders are more optimistic than I am about the future of artificial intelligence and policy, you'll be glad to have taken the time to read and understand their well-articulated arguments.
You know, it's
So,
nice of him to say, as someone who disagreed with us.
I was going to say that is exactly why I read it. So, what are you trying to do with the book? Because
In the book,
obviously.
we're trying to look at possibilities that if we're to get ahead of AI, right, instead of AI being something that happens to us or something that big tech foists on us, we need to think about the possibilities and think about what we could do to steer AI towards more democratic outcomes. That's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to look at the democracy writ large, from politics to lawmaking to administration, judiciary to people, how this technology could affect different areas, and then what we could do now to try to make the outcome good. Something that we as a democracy can be proud of. That's really the point.
But could we do this without guardrails? I mean, already, you have,
I don't know.
we have a society where truth is a moving target to begin with.
But that's always been true. So guardrails, I mean, we have guardrails in everything. I went to lunch in a restaurant today. There are guardrails. We call them health and safety codes. Right? There are guardrails on my car. There are guardrails when I get an airplane. There are guardrails for pharmaceuticals. Yes, there'll be guardrails for AI, just like there are guardrails for everything else. It's no different. I mean, AI isn't a magical technology. It is a technology that can do good. It can be taken advantage of. You know, we need law to step in to figure out, you know, what's legal and what's not, what's allowable, what isn't. I mean, law's doing a terrible job at that right now, especially in the United States, just because money and politics. You know, so I kind of this is kind of another one of those, you know, capitalism sucks problems. But, you know, we can in theory fix this. This is not different or magically hard in some way. It's regular hard.
So I'm calling you from Los Angeles, and people in this town, in the movie business and television and music, etc., are very concerned that they're going to be replaced, and
Yeah, but
already.
the Screen Actors Guild, but last year negotiated a really good contract. I mean, they used their power collectively to negotiate a surprisingly good contract to make that less likely.
Well, anecdotally, I know a fashion photographer who says he's being put out of business because his clients can get artificial models, virtual models, and dress them any way they like. They
Yeah,
don't need him anymore.
and that's going to happen. We could try to prevent that. It's likely a losing battle overall. But yes, this is going to be a technology that's going to cause a lot of job displacement. The open question that we don't know the answer to is, will this be like every other example of technology displacing jobs where new jobs appeared that now needed to be done? Or will this be different and result in widespread unemployment? And there's a reason people are talking about universal basic income now, because this might be different. I don't know. I mean, this is not something I research, but yes, this is something to be very concerned about.
Well, Bruce, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Bruce Nye, who is an internationally renowned security technologist and the New York Times bestselling author of 14 books, including A Hacker's Mind. He's a lecturer at Harvard's Kennedy School and a board member of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the chief of security architecture at Interrupt, Inc. His latest book, co-authored with Nathan Sanders, is Rewiring Democracy: How AI Will Transform Our Politics, Government, and Citizenship. He also has an article with Nathan Sanders at The Guardian, Don't Bet That the Pentagon or Anthropic is Acting in the Public Interest.